I'm John Moe. This week, Wits is in Los Angeles with the occasionally controversial comedian Margaret Cho.
And then the Korean community were really up in arms because I was such a filthy comic. Like, I was so, you know, like, it was like the equivalent of wearing shoes in the house.
Comic and actor Paul F. Tompkins tells us that child actors say the darndest things.
And then this little girl said, "What are you laughing at, you idiot?" And I said, I beg your pardon. And then she looked me in the eye and said, "What are you laughing at, you idiot?"
Plus, musician Will Sheff compares introspection to cake.
I like cake, and I like cake so much that I'm going to eat so much cake that I'm going to puke cake everywhere.
And music from Superchunk.
How's everything at the front of the house? How's everything at the front of the house? I'm nailed down, but so moving about, so how's everything?
All on Wits, coming right up. From APM, American Public Media, and KPCC, this is Wits. I'm John Moe. Coming to you from the Los Angeles Times Festival of Books at Bovard Auditorium in Los Angeles, Will Sheff of Acreville River is with us. Punk rock godfathers Superchunk are here. Comedians and actors Margaret Cho and Paul F. Tompkins. And our own house band, John Munson and the Witnesses. Certain works are considered classics, but not by everyone. And from time to time, we gather up one-star reviews, the lowest rating possible, of classic works from Amazon.com. Then we hand them to Paul F. Tompkins to perform as dramatic monologues. This is Amazon Review Theater.
None of the words have been changed. Gulliver's Travels. I can't take another page. I was excited to read this book. It would normally be within my taste of paper. Unfortunately, this book is god-awful. Drags on about nothing, doesn't create excitement where it should. The movie is stupid, too. Brave New World. Sorry I bought it. Not my idea of life, and I am applauded by what I read. I put it on my Kindle Fire so I can delete it. Fahrenheit 451. It is not the best book I have read. It was really weird and freaky. The thing about it was that I didn't comprehend it much. It was really a book that doesn't suit me that much. I didn't understand it much. At times, I felt stupid reading it because I didn't understand it. If you are a person who likes reading books about fire, this book is for you. It was way out of my league. I didn't care for the Ray Bradbury. But I am not saying I hate him. I am saying I might try some of his other books as well as this book that I didn't like. Although this book does not fit my categories or my type of books, I would not recommend it to other people who like serious stuff.
Paul F. Tompkins, everybody. Paul F. Tompkins is a comedian, actor, and writer. You might know him as the host of Best Week Ever or the show No You Shut Up, wherein he co-stars with puppets. He's been in a million TV shows and a ton of movies, and he's a veteran of Wits. Hello, Paul.
John, hello to you.
You recently filmed a TV show where you played a father of six kids. And I'm curious, as a guy without kids of your own, what was that like?
It really reaffirmed some life choices that I've made. the kids were all very sweet, and especially for child actors, that is a real rarity to have that many of them be normal seeming kids. And by the end, we shot for 2 weeks, and by the end of the second week, they were really behaving like siblings.
What is a abnormal child actor like?
It
sounds like you've worked with some of those as well.
Yeah, I did. The last time I played a TV dad was for a show that did not get picked up. And that was my first time being a TV dad. And there was a scene set in at one of the kids' birthday parties. And so some of the, there was a lot of kids there. And between takes, I was laughing at something that the director said. And then this little girl said, "What are you laughing at, you idiot?" And I said, I beg your pardon. And then she looked me in the eye and said, "What are you laughing at, you idiot?" And this girl was 6 years old, right? And then they didn't she and these other kids didn't understand the concept of improv. So with each take, the director was asking me to, like, you know, tag it. Like, we would get to the end of the written dialogue and you'd say, "Tag it with whatever you want." And so I'd do that, and then people would laugh. And then these kids didn't understand that everything was fine, like we got what we needed. And so everyone would laugh. And then these kids started getting mad at me, like, "Ugh, you're ruining it! Now we have to do it again!"
Paul, I have three kids of my own. This is exactly what kids are like all the time. Calling you an idiot and saying that you're ruining things.
Well, but at least you can take comfort in the fact that your kids are not getting paid to be that way.
That's right. They do it just for the love of it, really.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely. Paul F. Tompkins, ladies and gentlemen. Joining us this week is a singer, songwriter, and frontman of the band Ockerville River, whose latest album is The Silver Gymnasium. Here, along with John Munson and The Witnesses, is Will Scheff.
To the center of your hometown, and there's leaves in the street, and there are friends around you now, and all the days of your life in a line, all the way they seemed by 89. But it's not all right. Not even close to all right. Down the hall of your house, down the road in December, down, down, down the deep river, down, down the deep river, down the hall of your house, down the road in December, down, down the deep river. We lie awake at night in a tent, and I say, "Tell me about your uncle and his friend, because they seem like very bad men." Well, we wanna keep away from them. Bending the road back there, we saw the place they go. Tell me about the greatest show, or the greatest movie you know, or the greatest song that you tape from off the radio. Play it again and again, but it cuts off at the ending though. Tell me I'm always gonna be your best friend. You said it one time, why don't you say it again? All the way down the line to where the telephone ends. Come on and shout it on down the wire. It's not all right, not even close to all right. Down the hall of your house, down the road in December, down, down, down the deep river, down, down, down the deep river, down the hall of your house, down the road in December, down, down, down the deep river. And as the rescue party, the volunteer team, well, they're just kids of 18, and it's the worst thing they've seen, and they're standing all around that tree, and I'm so sorry, and I can't stop crying. Oh, I know. Shivering from the late fall cold, I felt like a solid ghost. I ran and man, I couldn't slow. My father found me though, my father took me home. He said, oh son, I saw you get knocked down, and I ran out, I bet your head was spinning. With that bright pain you're stunned, when you've only just begun to be only just beginning. Tossed in the viper pit, all those feelings and fears, and all that's difficult, kid. Hey, in those tender years, there was something in the air, something gathered in the air, something singing in the wind. Oh, I'll be your fighter, and you'll be my mirror, and you'll be alright, because I'll be right here. Oh, kid, now I'm not going anywhere, I swear, I'll try to not be going anywhere. It's not alright, it is still so far from alright. We'll make it into a choice somehow. I don't know, but you'll have a choice somehow. Down the hall of your house, down the road in December, down, down, down the deep river, down, down, down the deep river. We can never go back, we can only remember, down, down.
Thank you. That's Will Schaff along with John Munson and The Witnesses, Down, Down the Deep River. Will Schaff, welcome to Wits.
It's great to be here, yeah. Thank you.
I've listened to the Silver Gymnasium, your new record, so many times.
Awesome.
I love it. So I was in a situation where I was listening to it on the bus, and I just started crying because I loved it so much. And then I was in this uncomfortable position like, oh, I'm crying on the bus.
I did that with The Road with Cormac McCarthy. I read it on a plane in Australia, and I was like weeping openly next to this guy sitting next to me looking at me like, should I comfort him?
It's okay. I'm moved by art. Don't worry, everybody. What's the album about?
Well, I grew up in this really little town in New Hampshire. It's about 350 population. And, you know, it was the time before the internet. You know, we had like two TV channels. The dogs slept in the middle of Main Street. It was really nothing going on there, but there was this fascinating interconnectedness of all the people, and it was a really weirdly sheltered, but there was a kind of, I don't know, I guess I kind of grew up knowing that I wanted to write about that at some time, and it was something that I'd kind of kept in the back of my brain. But the thing that I kind of always try to clarify about this record is, I guess really what I wanted to do was write about nostalgia and write about looking back on your childhood from an adult standpoint, and about the things that go away and why it hurts that it goes away and why it's okay that it goes away. And it's not so much about, like, me. I mean, I started prefacing this whole thing saying, you know, I grew up in this town, blah, blah, blah. But it's really, I just think if I'd started talking about that in a general way, like, everybody goes through this stuff and it's really weird, it would have been generic. So I felt like I had to put something of myself on the table. So it's actually kind of the first time I wrote extensively autobiographically about my life.
And there's a lot of things that come up in multiple songs. Like, there are dads, there are balconies, there are proper names,
mm-hmm.
Richie and Jason and some of these things. It almost sounds like a set of short stories.
I just really love when an artwork feels like there's a whole world to it and you're never going to really get the full explanation of what things are, but it feels like you just got a page torn out of a book and you know that there's a whole book somewhere, you know?
Do you find that you're looking back on those things through the course of making this album, that those events change, that you look at them differently than you used to?
Yeah, well, you know, they say that, you know, I always grew up thinking memory was like this sort of chest of drawers and you had everything filed away and it was there. But they say that that's not how it is at all, that you actually are like sort of synthesizing, resynthesizing memories when you're having them, and that you get a little bit less juice out of them every time. And I was aware that that was going to be something that was going to happen, that I'm this real nostalgic guy, and I have a sort of a morbid thinking things were always better in the past quality to me. And I knew that I was kind of destroying or at least degrading my memories by doing this. And then sometimes it's almost like I like cake, and I like cake so much that I'm going to eat so much cake that I'm going to puke cake everywhere, and then I'm never going to want cake anymore. And I think that there was a little bit of that.
So you binged on memories.
All my records
until you
are
threw
a little
them
bit
up.
Like that.
Okay.
Yeah, like I'm going to eat so much nostalgia that it makes me sick.
Well, I'm glad you're feeling better, and I'm glad that we have the music for us. Will Sheff, everybody, from Acreville River. Coming up, more music from Superchunk and Will Sheff, more laughs from Margaret Cho and Paul F. Tompkins. This is WITS. I'm John Moe.
WITS is supported by Delta Airlines, offering a USB port at every seat on all long-haul international flights. Delta, keep climbing.
This is WITS. I'm John Moe, here with punk rock icon Superchunk and Will Sheff of Acreville River, as well as comedians and actors Margaret Cho and Paul F. Tompkins. Margaret Cho is an actor, comedian, fashion designer, writer, singer, songwriter, and activist. Her credits include solo shows like The Notorious C.H.O., the movie Face Off, TV shows like Sex and the City and 30 Rock. She currently appears in the show Drop Dead Diva, Good Pal of Ours. Margaret Cho, welcome back to Wits.
Thank you. Thank you. It's so exciting to be here with all my friends.
I know, in Southern California.
I love it.
I knew you for a couple of things early on, and one of them was the sitcom All-American Girl. And for people who don't remember, describe what that was.
This was in 1994. It was the first Asian-American family on television that had lines, so it wasn't MASH. And we debuted the show. It was on ABC, and it was very difficult because I was considered too fat to play the role of myself. So I became very anorexic, and I was hospitalized, and then the show was canceled and replaced by Drew Carey's show because he's so thin. And
just to rail that one.
But it was weird because I would watch Drew Carey's show, and I noticed they had all of our old furniture. And I'd be like, that's my lamp. But it was a very odd thing because we had some people from USC actually come, and they were our Korean consultants, because we were not trusted with the duties of being Korean enough.
So you had been a pretty successful stand-up comedian. Weren't you part of the writing staff of this show?
No, because they really, really did not necessarily hire me for that. They hired me because I was sort of the perfect fit because they wanted to make it more of a multicultural experience, television, which is very admirable. And at that time, there was only 4 channels. So this is a very, very big deal. And the first episode, I think, aired to 26 million people. It was really a very, very big failure, which was very hard to kind of manage. I was 23 years old, and I didn't know what to do.
Were there Korean Americans or Asian Americans on the writing staff, like coming up with what you said?
Yes.
Okay.
But there was not necessarily room for that because it was this thing where we weren't really allowed to be that Asian, or we were too Asian, or we were not Asian enough. There was all this kind of weird criticism about that. And then the Korean community were really up in arms because I was such a filthy comic. Like, I was so, it was like the equivalent of wearing shoes in the house. You know? It was so...
Whoa.
It was so revolutionary.
Yes. This is public radio, Margaret. Don't talk about shoes in the house. Despite the medical problems and all that went along with it, are you glad that you did that show?
Oh, yeah. I'm really glad. Because it gave a lot of people, I think a lot of Asian American kids especially, saw it as the first time they were seeing other Asian Americans on television. And that they weren't doing anything that they didn't identify with. You know, that they really felt like, you know, when you feel invisible as a minority, it's very hard to articulate it. But then when you can see somebody doing what you're doing, then it gives you a lot of strength to carry on. So I feel like, in a way, I got to birth a lot of Asian American comedians from my work. And even though it wasn't the proudest moment for me, the fact that I can see people doing it now is very exciting.
Yeah. Does it inform the work that you do now? I mean, are there lessons learned from that you're still carrying around?
Well, I just know that I have to eat food and not be anorexic. And the thing is that nobody really cared about my health. They just wanted me to be thin. And that was really terrifying, you know, and I just could not make my body, I couldn't command it to be any smaller than it was, and I thought if I starve myself that this would work somehow, and I feel like that pressure is put on women so much, and so to be able to, like, survive that and enjoy my fatness now is really pleasurable.
Being around you is pleasurable. Margaret Cho, everybody.
You.
Well, with us this week in Los Angeles, a punk rock combo out of North Carolina. Their latest album is called I Hate Music. Please welcome Superchunk.
Thank you so much.
We'll be right back.
We'll look at, oh, in the silence. Remember the permanence. Every morning, swear I'll be found. So how's everything at the front of the house? How's everything at the front of the house? I'm nailed down, but so moving about. So how's everything at the front of the house? Your tall windows. We're always hoping. Everything at the front of the house, tied to the timbers and the ropes are stout, but how's everything at the front of the house? How's everything at the front of the house? How's everything at the front of the house? Everyone knows that I'm not proud, but how's everything at the front of the thing at the front of the house? I don't know, I can't see out. How's everything at the front of the house? I don't know, I can't see out. How's everything at the front of the house? How's everything at the front of the house? The drums exploded.
Thank you.
That's Superchunk. F-O-H. Support for Wits comes from the 10,000-calorie malted mocha meltdown from Starbucks. No cup can hold it. No human can drink it. Starbucks is required by law not to serve it to you. We get additional funding from a dog's mouth. Cleaner than a human's mouth, but still don't keep anything in there. It's a dog's mouth. And we get additional support from Underoos. Not the kids' underwear, just the underside of kangaroos. Folks, if you saw the Oscars, you know that Matthew McConaughey is a font of wisdom. He spouts gems to inspire a nation, or at least the stoners and film school students within the nation. He is so sage, Matthew McConaughey, so insightful that sometimes it is hard to tell the difference between McConaughey and Confucius. Both spout pearls of wisdom, both play the bongos, both love to be shirtless. So, a little game then, McConaughey or Confucius. Our contestants will listen to a quote and decide who said it, Confucius or McConaughey. Paul F. Tompkins and Will Sheff will be one team, Margaret Cho and Superchunk the other. Paul and Will, you're up first. Everything has its beauty, but not everyone sees it.
That seems really Confucius.
It's Confucian.
What do you think?
I think Confucius.
Confucius. We
Confucius is right.
Yeah.
Good work.
Yeah.
Margaret Cho. All right.
Margaret Cho and Superchunk. When I'm surfing, I'm sure not thinking about the paparazzi.
Really take your time.
Is that from Dazed and Confucius?
That's McConaughey. You're correct. Paul and Will, choose a job you love and you will never have to work a day in your life.
I think, given that in Confucius's time, there were only like four jobs. There was emperor, yeah. peasant, executioner, fisherman.
Assistant peasant.
There's
I
also
think.
A self-satisfied sort of self-congratulatory yeah. tone that I...
Yeah, that, like that statement went in with, like I did.
Yeah, yeah, yeah exactly.
I'm going to say McConaughey.
I'm sorry, it's Confucius.
What?
Man.
You can't choose to be a king, Confucius.
Margaret Cho and Superchunk, this one is for you. We dissect failure a lot more than we dissect success.
Oh, this is from How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. It's got to be. They didn't dissect things back then.
Yeah. Yeah.
There were no jobs. They didn't dissect anything.
Should we? Is it?
All those frogs they wish they could see inside.
Yeah, Matthew McConaughey.
McConaughey is correct.
Oh. Yeah!
Too easy.
Tompkins and Chef, you cannot open a book without learning something.
That is so not true.
That's flat out not
true. You can open a book with your eyes closed.
Oh, good point, Will. But then you might learn something about how the book
Confucius.
Feels. Or Matthew McConaughey.
Mark McConaughey. I expect more from Confucius.
I feel like, I expect more from Confucius.
You got to do better than that, Confucius.
I think that's a McConaughey.
Confucius.
What?
Over to Cho and Superchunk. The best advice comes from people who do not give advice.
I feel like he said that right before getting Aerosmith tickets is the number one priority of the summer.
I'm thinking you're right. I mean, I don't know.
You going with McConaughey?
I don't know. What do you think?
Confucius.
All right. Confucius? Okay, we're going with Confucius.
It was McConaughey.
Oh!
All right. One more question for each of you. Paul F. Tompkins and Will Sheff, the more you understand seems the more you like to do.
I beg your pardon?
There's some translation issues in the Confucius.
The more you
sure.
understand seems the more you like to do.
My brain has been rewired by this point anyway.
The more you understand seems the more you like to do.
That's it.
McConaughey.
McConaughey?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, it was a trick question. It was Billy Squire. It's a quote from Everybody Wants You. No points. And then finally, Cho and Superchunk, we belong to the light, we belong to the thunder.
That is Pat Benatar.
Pat Benatar!
Oh, clearly.
Boo! Oh, yeah, sorry.
I'm going to give them bonus points for tracking Pat Benatar. Cho and Superchunk win the game. Congratulations. Coming up, more with comedians and actors Margaret Cho and Paul F. Tompkins, as well as punk rockers Superchunk and Will Sheff. This is WITS. I'm John Moe.
WITS is supported by Delta Airlines, the U.S. airline offering personal on-demand entertainment at every seat on all long-haul international flights. Delta, keep climbing.
This is WITS. I'm John Moe, here with punk rock icon Superchunk and Will Sheff of Vacaville River, as well as comedians and actors Margaret Cho and Paul F. Tompkins. Support for WITS comes from David Foster Wallace and Gromit, the strange and somewhat disturbing new claymation cartoon. Additional support provided by Cookies for Breakfast, because shut up is why. And by conspiracy theories, giving the world the gentle comfort that there is an order and plan to the way things happen. And by religion, giving the world the gentle comfort that there is an order and plan to the way things happen. Here with more music, Superchunk.
What is it worth? Can't bring anyone back to this hurt. Fill in the space between all of the notes. I got nothing else, so I guess here we go. Crammed into the back of the van, oh yeah. All of our friends with their plan, oh yeah. Some wild jockey up in the front seat. Put in a tape, put up your feet all the time.
Thank you.
Superchunk, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, Paul F. Tompkins reads one-star reviews of classics from Amazon.com. This is Amazon Review Theater.
The Great Gatsby.
I have just started reading this book, and I don't like what I've read so far. It is very complicated to understand, and there are a lot of characters. I am still reading the book, so maybe it will get better.
That one was in all caps.
It was all caps.
Yeah.
I would think that would be obvious. Oedipus Rex.
This book was very boring to me. It was kind of hard to understand. The part when they were having sex with their family was very nasty. I hope that I would not have to ever read anything else about this book. The Book of Oedipus, which I did not like at all.
Scrabble. Scrabble is often considered a classic game, but it is actually very outdated. The object of any game is for it to be fun. Scrabble is not fun in the truest sense of the word. If you actually just analyze the game itself, its creativity, and its entertainment value, Scrabble is barely worth 5 minutes of fun. If you compare it to the ultra-realistic and dynamic video games that technology has enabled us to enjoy these days, Scrabble is clearly yesterday's news.
Paul F. Tompkins, everybody. Folks, folks, Witz has recently unearthed some rare recordings never before heard in public. They come from interviews held with the Traveling Wilburys in the 1980s. This was a supergroup consisting of Bob Dylan, Tom Petty, George Harrison, Roy Orbison, and possibly other people. Enjoy.
Tom Petty here. You know, Handle With Care is a song about our early days. By the time George Harrison joined, we'd been together for many years. Bob Dylan and I. Bob joined in, what year was that?
1983. We were a street gang back then. Leather jackets, crimes. Roy Orbison was our leader.
Being successful musicians, it wasn't always easy to find time for crimes, but we made time. We cared about vandalism and switchblade fights. The music industry was different back then.
Anyway, when George joined, we had to jump him in.
Been beat up and battered around. Been sent up and I've been shot down. You're the best thing that I've ever found. Handle me with care.
They were the best thing I ever found. The beatings were worth it. I was sick of my reputation as the quiet, spiritual Beatle George Harrison.
Reputations changeable, situations tolerable. Baby, you're adorable. Handle me with care.
The 80s were a crazy time. Live Aid, other things. Then all the crime on top of that.
I was the country's first crack dealer.
Roy Orbison single-handedly started the crack epidemic. We all became best mates.
Everybody's got somebody to lean on. Put your body next to mine and dream.
Over time, our gang grew the attention of larger gangs who felt there wasn't enough room on the streets for the Crips, the Bloods, and the Traveling Wilburys.
They began to retaliate.
I've been fobbed off and I've been fooled. I've been robbed and ridiculed. In daycare centers and night schools. Handle me with care.
Robbed and ridiculed in a daycare center was the low point.
We were losing. After all, there were thousands of guys in those gangs. We only had four.
Five. I was in it too. Jeff Lynn from ELO. I was a Traveling Wilbury.
I think we would have remembered that, mate.
Been stuck in airports, terrorized. Sent to meetings, hypnotized. Handle me with care.
We were targeted so much by the other gangs and the police that we had to split up and go into hiding. But I missed being together as a group.
I'm so tired of being lonely. I still have some love to give. Won't you show me that you really care?
You know, finally, Bob had the idea that we just leave crime alone for a while and write songs about our experiences.
That was my idea. Jeff Lynn, a VLO, also in the group.
It was a big hit, but whenever you hear it, just know we'd all rather be robbing banks.
Oh, the sweet smell of success. Handle me with care.
John Worster as Tom Petty, Paul F. Tompkins as George Harrison, Margaret Cho as Roy Orbison, Mac McCann as Jeff Lynne, me as Bob Dylan, the witnesses as the Traveling Wilburys. I am so glad to be here. I love L.A., and this trip gave me a chance to check up on a little real estate investment property that I own. See, I got this weird hobby. I find property that's selling for $200 or less, and I buy it just for the fun of it, just to do it. And a few months ago, I bought a photomat booth for $150. This is one of the last ones still standing. It's at an abandoned mall out in Reseda. Do you guys remember photomat? These little booths with pyramid roofs, and you took your film there to get it developed. My photomat is out of business, of course. No one needs it anymore, but I own the hut. I have a key. So last night, I drove out there and went inside, dusty shelves, a broken chair, and then I noticed a hatch in the floor. I had to use a crowbar to pry it open, and when I did, there was a long staircase under there, and then a hallway. I walked down it a while and found another staircase going up, which led to another hatch that opened into another photo mat. But this one was very much in business. I looked out the window, and I saw a sign that said, North Cleveland Shoppingplex. In the parking lot, a variety of Ford Pintos, Pacers, Gremlins, big old Buicks. I checked the receipts at the register, and this photomat was in 1979. My photomat was a time portal, which is not bad for $150. Before long, Terry showed up. He's the manager there. He was surprised to see me, but I explained about the time portal in the hallway, and he was fine. In fact, he came back with me, and he's here now. Hi, Terry.
Hi. Wow, this is the future, huh?
Yeah. And, Terry, I should let you know that photomats aren't in business anymore in our present day.
Oh, that's too bad. What do people do with their film?
Oh, well, we don't even use film. We have these phones that we carry around with us, and they have cameras built into them, digital cameras, so you see your picture right away on a screen. Take a look.
Wow, that's cool. How many pictures can you keep on a phone?
Thousands. And we never print them or anything. They just stay on our phones or computers. I have so many that I load them onto hard drives, which are like storage things for stuff on our computers.
So what are you taking pictures of, like flying cars?
No. No, we don't have those. Just give up on the flying cars. We take pictures of everything all the time. When we go out with friends, we take pictures. When we walk our dogs. And we take a lot of ourselves. We call those selfies. And we just hold up the camera and take pictures of ourselves looking at the camera.
But why?
I don't know.
It sounds like a lot of work.
Well, it is, now that you mention it. The thing is, I'm always looking at my phone when I take a picture. It's weird. When something happens, I don't look at the thing that's happening. I look at it through my phone, and then I have a picture, but I never have seen the thing that I took the picture of. It's just a flat 2D pixel image of it.
Where do you find the time to look at all these pictures?
I don't. Well, what do you do with photos in 1979?
Put them in photo albums. I keep the photo albums in the living room so I can look at them comfortably. I treasure them. I have to be really careful, too. Film can get expensive, so I only take pictures of things that really count. Christmas, birthdays, stuff we want to remember.
It's funny, there was this whole industry around personal photography back in your day, and you didn't spend very much time at all taking pictures. What did you do all day?
Lived, I guess. Hey, do you need any flash bulbs?
No, I'm good. That's Terry, everybody. Thank you, Terry. And here again, please welcome Will Sheff.
Thank you.
stuck in Indian summers and dad's on the line, but I'm fine. Is the phone? Oh, it's floating away, going away on the tide. Crystallized wishes like kids crying for Christmases, ticking off lists with the pens and the fists before floating away and going away on the tide. On the back of a beast in a midnight charge down a broken beach, the little stars, they spin the sharpest shards of light on down. To the mouth of a sea in a morning curled up in a cab at the edge of the world, the lights of fire go lying. Transferred through a person, a mystical blur. Got you going away, or floating away on the tide. Through bottom road basements, a pitfall and cave in, a crackling tapes cross veins. When the song ends, I'm floating away and going away on the tide. With the burnt out cars all licked by the sea, those slicked out stars all screaming from a distant high remove. In the fizzed out snow of a cathode screen, I saw a broken ghost in an old soap scene. I let his dead and dreamy eyes follow my. It fought me, it found me while floating away, going away on the tide. Shooting through time with my eyes getting glassy and lined while I watch seasons rocketing past me. They're going away a little more every day, all the time. On a balcony at the these things that just gotta be, I don't know why. And I said, here's to the freeway flasher, here's to the desperate dasher, guard him and keep him from crashing on his tail.
Will Sheff with John Munson and the Witnesses. Want more wits in your life? Go to witsradio.org and find out how you can see a wits show in person. You can sign up for our newsletter and get the latest about what other wits guests are up to. Or tell us what you're up to on Twitter. Just tag us. We're at wits. Thanks to our guests this week, Paul F. Tompkins, Margaret Cho, Will Sheff, and Superchunk. And special thanks to the LA Times Festival of Books, who presented Wits at Bovard Auditorium in Los Angeles. And thanks to our media partner, KPCC. We get help from broadcast engineer Corey Schreppel, as well as stage manager Eric Stromstad, coordinating producer Hans Buto, and our intern Sam Siegel. Wits is written by me and Ben Acker, Wendy Molyneux and Jeff Drake, John Osbold, and Mike Fotis. Our executive producer is Peter Clowney. Wits was created by Tony Bowl, senior producer Larissa Anderson, and me. I'm John Moe. Bye now.